Okay, let's begin. We have a lot to do in between this week and next week. We will finish 2 years on a Reuven. And next year is Kol HaTorah Kula, very different. But that's next. Be'ezrat Hashem. God should give strength. Today is Sunday, May 10th, 2015. It's our next to last shiur in a Reuven for the year. Now, if you recall, last week we were dealing with the PhD thesis by our friend Rabbi Adam Mintz, and a brilliant thesis, very fascinating, the level on which it's written, the halachic analysis, the historic analysis. And I only want to mention that a lot of people from Toronto contacted me with more and more. I don't remember the issues of the slopes of the banks of the rivers. The names of the rivers are the Don River, the Humber River, someone else, Rabbi Kepa, doesn't mention one of the problems some Rabbanim had with Rabbi Price's Erev. Rabbi Krishna told me that one issue was that, yes, the boundaries were the rivers on the west and the east would sound perfect, but the slopes on the banks of the rivers from shore to under the water were too shallow, according to some opinions. And I have to say, I believe I did mention it. If not, you just have to check Dr. Mintz's doctorate, and all these factors are in there. Rabbi Kurtzner, by the way, just recently retired. He was rabbi of the Clinton Park Synagogue, Rabbi Yitzchak Kurtzner. He was there for over 30 years, and he a very, very highly regarded, a mismach of Torah Vadas, a fine Talmud Chacham. I believe it was his father who was a very prominent Rav. It's either his father or brother. But I believe it was, there was a Rabbi Kirshner in Borough Park who also was very prominent. And it's a wonderful, wonderful family. Andrew Rosenberg, I believe Avraham is his Hebrew name, wrote to me that he's behind and listening to the Shirim, but he just heard the Shirin Rabbi Shimon Schwab's Pardes article. It may interest you to know that Rabbi Schwab reprinted the article in his Sefer on Chumash, Ma'ayan Beit HaShoeva, published in 1994. It appears in Parshat Vayakhel with an added postscript. It is preceded by a discussion of the nature of the Isa of Hotza'ah on Shabbat. So that's interesting that the article that we referred to, that we found it just gives you a, if you recall the article, it's like landing a spaceship in the 1950s and viewing what was going on in American Orthodoxy. It was a very insightful article, and Adam informs us it was reprinted in the Chumash, the source I gave you, and I thank Avraham for that information. At the end of the shiur last week, we showed an interesting connection to a very prominent rabbi, Rabbi Shalom Gold, and how the Erev in West Hempstead comes about as a result of Toronto. It goes back to his wife, Bela, who was raised in Toronto, and all her life she had an Erev, and suddenly she comes to West Hempstead, and there's no Erev, and she can't take the children out on Shabbat. And when you're used to an Erev, it's very difficult to manage without an Erev. And lo and behold, as a result of that feeling, he goes about, forms a committee, they build the Erev, they bring in Rabbi Shimon Ida, who was one of our Chaburah, as I told you. It hurts the world, and I have a piece in the Rav, the World Of, and it's Rebbe describing how a Rebbe talks about a world that is no more. And younger people have difficulty understanding the Rebbe's emotions. But it's like you relate to a world that is no more. And I mean, my world, the Rav, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Aaron Cutler, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, come down, Rav Shimon Ida. I mean, there was a Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Kalt, Rabbi Kalt, you don't even know who he was. He was the only person who left Torah Vadas to go to study at YU, Yeshiva Shibitzchol Chanan, after high school. And his old Rabbeim in Torah Vadas admitted, as at Gestigen and Lernen in YU, despite their critique and their criticisms, he was one exception. His wife, I don't know if she's still alive. She was very active, a feminist already by the late 60s, early 70s. Rivka Hout, she's written books. Maybe you recognize the name, H-A-U-T. And when I was rabbi in Pennsylvania, he did the chesed that I could never do. I wouldn't have the nerve to do it. He let me use his car when I was learning how to drive to practice. He would drive with me, and I'd drive too fast, too slow. His heart was in his mouth, as the expression goes. And he was studying, I believe, at the UFP for a graduate degree at the time. So it's a world gone by. But Rabbi Shimon Ida, who was a year younger than I am, he was a classmate of Steve Riskin. They're the Brooklyn boys that came up to him after high school. Tzvi Grona, Shimi Ida, Alan Dershowitz was part of that Chabura. Norman Sohn was part of that Chabura. They were all classmates. If not classmates, a year apart. They were all basically Brooklyn Dodger fans, although Lahachas among them probably was a New York Giant fan. Okay. Now, and this topic that Rabbi Shalom Gold writes about, his wife's complaining how hard that life is without an Erev. I want to devote the first part of today's share. I want to give you an amazing source. And all right, I trust some of you will be Lamdunim of Hakam and Poskim. I know in my life I chose to be a Malamed. If I wouldn't have been a Malamed, I would have been a Dayan, because I have a Chush for Psak. I realized that over the years I've gotten many difficult Shilas, and Baruch Hashem, I've been able to survive, to guide, to answer. And you can't always been right, but I don't think I've ever been wrong. We understand. On Yom Tov Sheni, you can never be right, but at least I've never been wrong. Anyway, be it as it may, tell me, are you allowed to take this into consideration? Herbie Maltz's daughter says to him, Abba, I don't want to live in a place without an Erev. I'm used to an Erev already. Can you take this into consideration? Do we have to look lahakel, a machlekes, a basic machlekes? We all know the machlekes. Adam instead of a doctorate on it, Rakefet spoke 2 years about it. Is there a shitarab in the right of Bisman? Isn't that, if you follow me, a basic question? Do you have to take in consideration that your wife is giving you the devil, that she grew up with a Erev, she can't take the kids out on Shabbat, etc.? Okay. And here I want to give you an amazing source and open your eyes to an interesting sukkah. And I want to thank my Talmud, Josh Schneider from West Hempstead. His father, by the way, was part of our Chabura in NYU. His father was a sheikhet, a sofer. I don't believe Josh has inherited those abilities, but I know that he's a computer whiz, so high tech. So Josh comes from, his father was Marvin Schneider. It's Josh comes, beautiful, beautiful family. You've read about his father in the New York Times. His father is the clockmaster of New York City. You know, he's in charge of the clocks that appear on public buildings owned by the city. He has to set them and check them. He is the clockmaster of New York City. I hope that goes with a salary and not just with an august title. Josh, who does good research, introduced me to an individual that I never heard about, although you can pick up about this individual in the Sri Dei Esh. I'll give you an interest. His name is Rav Menachem Mendel Landau, probably from the famous Landau family. He was a Rav in Europe approximately 100 years ago, 110, 15, 20. And he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, but also a person who was part of the modern world. And you can see the Sri Dei Esh praises him. Look into the new edition of the Sri Deyesh, Chelik Bet, page Shin Yud Chet. That would be 318, right? Kufrei Shin, Shin Yud Chet, 318. But I believe the pagination is in Hebrew, if I wrote it in Hebrew. And you'll see the Sri Deyesh praises Rav Menachem Mendel Landau and is upset that the world doesn't know how great he was, both in learning and in hashkafa and his ability to enable Torah to thrive in the modern Western world. Now, the Sefer that I'm quoting from is Sefer Mekitz Nirdamim, Wake Up Those That Are Asleep, by Rav Landau, published originally in 1903 or 1904. It says Tarsad, and whenever you have a Hebrew date, there's always the problem of translating it into the English year because you have to know the month. It's always a problem. You'll see on the research on Rav Chaim Volozhin and the founding of Volozhin Yeshiva, some Sfarim will say 1802, some Sfarim will say 1803, and it all goes back to the fact that a date in Hebrew, when does the new year begin? When does Tav Shin Ayin Vav begin? This coming August, September, right or wrong, whenever Rosh Hashanah is. No, the year will still be 2015. The rest of the year will fold over, will take us into 2016. So that's why you can never be sure. But this Sefer was published 1903-1904. And Josh sent me a printout today. He was able to print it out from the computer. There's a service that does it for you. I think it was for $15. And they give you a printout of the Sefer. And beginning on page 13... he goes into a very interesting discussion. And he explains in the city where he was Rav, he built an Erev. And immediately, people got involved in the whole machloket. Can you build an Erev? Can't you build an Erev? The streets are wider than 16 Amot, even though you don't have 600,000 people in this city. And there was a whole discussion. And there were those that approved it and those who opposed it. And he says something amazing here. Rafi, he quotes the halacha that you're not allowed to heat a mikveh. And I'll give you sources. I'll give you the Gemara. I'll give you the Shulchan Aruch. You're not allowed to heat a mikveh. No, why aren't you allowed to heat a mikveh? Because, and the Gemara tells the story, and no one understands. What's wrong? What's wrong, Avram? What's wrong heating a mikveh? Ah, because they used to heat it by bringing hot water in vessels. And you get involved with the whole problem of mayim she'uvim. You follow me, Noah? If you're going to bring it in vessels, it's not direct. It's not direct flow. It's mayim she'uvim. It's not natural waters. And you're going to invalidate the mikveh. You follow? Once you have mayim she'uvim, you're going to have a whole problem. Of course, once you have a kosher mikveh lachatchila, you can bring all the mayim she'uvim in the world. That's a different story. That's our mikvot. Work with hashaka. With the opening in the middle, you've all seen a mikvah has a bar. You machshir the bar, and then you can bring all the water in the world into that mikvah. But it seems from this Gemara that you can't heat a mikvah. Now, I don't want to embarrass anyone here, but you ask your wives if they would be willing to go to a cold, unheated mikveh. Some of you know what happened to me a few years ago. My grandson asked me to be Sunday at the brit of my great-grandson, and my grandson asked me to go to mikveh before I'm Sunday. So I go to the mikveh in Kiryat Moshe, I have to, not Kiryat Moshe, in where are we? We're in Rehov Shachal, Kivat Mordechai. I was ready to say Kiyat Mordechai. You know, the problem is Moshe Mordechai begins with Mem. It's when you grow older, these, whenever something begins, I have daughters-in-law, granddaughters-in-law, all beginning with Aleph. So I got to remember, this one is Avia, this one is Oria. I have one Zahavid, all right, that's the easiest one. Brurier is not difficult, etc. And Michelle is altogether easy because she's from Baltimore in English, Michelle. All right, Avia, Oria, I can stumble. Givat Mordechai. So I go to the mikveh and give it Mordechai, and the mikveh knew that a rotten, vicious, no good Litvak was coming, so they took Nekama from me. I walk into the mikveh. First of all, you don't have to pay. This is very, what do you mean you have to pay? You generally have to, I think it's a 5 shekel coin, or am I right, or a 10 shekel, 5 shekel, I think. It used to be 5 shekel. You have to pay to go through the gate. No, the gate is open. And then I see if there are two people that tell me it's a problem, the mikveh broke down, there's no heat. So I decide I got to go to the mikveh. I don't have a choice. I went into a cold mikveh. Believe me, until today, 3, 4, 5 years later, my health still suffers. No, it's 2 years later. And I just gave that grandson a birthday gift. It's going to be two while we're in the States. I just suffer from that mikveh. So now, and we talk about the Russian ladies who were mosrat nefesh to go in the winter, freezing water in Russia, where they went to natural mikvot. God have mercy, what people went through, l'kayen tarat mishpacha. So nowadays we heat the mikvah. Heat the mikvah? How are you allowed? And you see, the Rabbanim went out of their way lahakel. They understood that this is a tremendous problem, and you're dealing here with people who cannot go into freezing water, and you're dealing here with, at the most, is an esoteric Isha the Rabbanon, and these people, these Rabbanim, we have to do what we can, lavo likratam, to help the women go to mikvah. Now, let me give you the sources. Very fascinating. Bracha taf chav bet amir aleph. And amalahu rahuna l'rabbanon, rabotai, Mipnei ma atem mizalzalim b'tfilah zo. Now, this is the sugya of a man. There was a takana of Ezra that Jewish men should remain upright and not become sexual deviants, that every time they had a seminal admission, they have to go to mikvah. Okay? And you all know this is one of the famous, call it a takana, call it a gezeira. This is one of the famous examples of a gezeira she'ein chatzibur yecholim la'amod ba. And therefore, this gezeira, this innovation, was abolished. Now, that's what makes chabadnikim bifrat, Hasidim in general, very different than Litvakim, because the Hasidim said, yes, they abolished Takanat Ezra, but that's for regular Jews. For we who are Hasidim and very pious and Anshei Maisa, we go to mikveh every day. And you all know that Chabadnikim go every day. I can tell you, Eidet Nemana, wherever I've been and I've seen Chabadnikim, every day they go to mikveh. Because once you introduce a takana like this, you don't want the world to laugh at you. Today you go to mikveh, tomorrow you don't go to mikveh. You understand modesty, so you go every day.
But it's also Tosefet Tahara, even if you didn't.
They're not beside. I understand. Of the mikveh takes on in Kabbalistic reasons. That's why there are other people who are not so like Chabadnikim who go every day. So they go Erev Shabbos, Erev Yom Tov. Okay? I come from a world where the Rav, it was a Litvak, was a Briska. He, one time in Moria, it's on tape, you can pick it up. For 200 years now, everyone will be listening to these Shavurim, and they'll hear the Rav say, in Yiddish, it's all in Yiddish, and he's talking with his Kahal in Moria. You know what Moria was, right? Every Tuesday night, the Rav used to say, this was a shul established in the heart of the Upper West Side, Broadway, what was it? I write the exact address in the Rav. I think it was Broadway in 72nd Street, 73rd. So right there. I remember being there, right there. So you walked up one flight. Next door was a music school. They were always practicing. And next to it was a shul established by mainly diamond dealers. And for the Rav to give shir every Tuesday, I think by contract he had to spend the Shabbat there once a month. And I think either Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, one of the two he had to spend there. There was an entire contract. And that was how the Rav had support. There was just, I can tell you, when it was Menachem Avil at the Liechtenstein, so my classmate, Rav Chaim, was sitting next to me, and on the other side of Rav Chaim was sitting Neshachem, my neighbor. We lived in the same building together many years, Dr. Sam Dershowitz. And Sam had just heard the Shir of the Rav, which I translated. I translated from the Yiddish into the English. It's in the Rav, but he just heard the actual Shir. And the Rav is thanking the yeshiva from saving him from the rabbinate. And because of the yeshiva, he became a lamdan. He was able to learn, and he had good students. They had to answer questions. They had to stay up. He had to do his research. And he's thanking YU for what it did for him. So Alan's cousin quotes this to Chaim, to our classmate, to Professor Grach, Dr. Grach. So he's quoting it to Dr. Grach. So Chaim, no, my father was always a rabbi, and it's not so. And what did Chaim mean? His father was a rabbi of Moria, all right? And Chaim says, and how do you think my father made a living from the $3,000 a year that Yeshiva University paid him? He had to be in the rabbinate. So I have to tell you, Sam was right. Moria was not an ordinary rabbinate. You understand what I'm saying? Moria is like Lahavdil. They'll come to Aaron Rakefer, to David Miller, and say, we love your Shayurim. We're building a shul around you. All you have to do is give Shayurim. You understand that? And we're going to give you, let's use today's money, and for the honor of having Shayurim from you, we're giving you $500,000 a year. You understand? All right, when you get the $500,000 a year, today you're independent. You understand? You're in Rodriguez, in A-Rod's league. Yes, my initials, A-Rod Kefit, A-Rodriguez, right or wrong? 661 home runs. Let's talk business now. So, Chaim is right, but Chaim is wrong. But Sam was smart enough. He said to me in the car going back to Yerushalayim, Sam was driving me, Sam says to me, I don't argue with Chaim. I said, Baruch Hashem, you don't argue with Chaim is right. But I said, technically he's right. His father was a rabbi. His father had panasa from Moria. But that was not a rabbinate. That was a different type of rabbinate. So at Moria, one time the Rav, who had a very good sense of humor, and he's asking the Balabatam, oh, when do we meet next week? It's before Yom Kippur. And he says, you're a lot of Hasidim here. You're all going to be busy going to mikveh. He says, Bin Abriska, he says, Reb Chaim didn't go to mikveh. My father didn't. It's a different world altogether. But Chassidim, Maisa Nefesh. So here you see the Gemara Brachot in this sugya where they're talking about the abolishment of Takonet Ezra. Mipnei Ma'atim Mezal Zalim B'Tfil Azu. The Rebbe is asking his Talmidim, what, Rabotai? It's a merit of Gemara. He's giving Musa. What's with you? How come you people don't go to mikvah? Mishum tzina? You're worried about the fact the mikvah is cold? Heat it up! Amalei Rav Chisda, v'chiyesh tefila b'chamim? And can you go to mikvah in warm water? And here the Rishonim have a tremendous problem. What's wrong with going to a warm mikvah? And tell me, in the summer, you're toivel in the ocean? The water is warm. You go swimming in the ocean. What's wrong? The summer, you're toivel? What's wrong with warm water? So the basic pshat here is that they would bring the water to heat the mikveh in Kalim, and they were choshesh from mayim she'uvim. Look into the Shulchan Aruch, Hilchot Mikvaot, it's Resh Aleph, Sif Katan Ayin Hay. Sif Katan Ayin Hay. Phil, you're wondering what this has to do with a river? We'll connect it very strongly in a few minutes, but we already started. Yeah, go ahead.
When I was in Moscow, one of the shaylos that was asked was whether they used to have a heating pipe in the building.
Right, right.
And they used to build a mikvah around the heating pipe.
Right, right, right.
The heating pipe would peel.
Right, right. And it would cause problems for the mikvah. Today we don't build the heating pipe. You'll see, today they have ways of heating the mikvah underneath. They have all ingenious systems that there's no shaila whatsoever. But here's the source. Yesh mishosa lachatil yorem aleya mayim chamim letolcha mikvah lechamamo. V'chein lemalot mikvah mayim chamim. In other words, you can't have hot water in the mikvah. Why? Mayim she'uvim. The chshash. The Rama says, v'yesh makilim umatirin, that if you're doing it to heat it and you're doing it in a way that it's not mayim she'uvim, you don't have to worry. Umikol makom yesh lahachmir im lo b'makom shenahagu lahakel. Az ein limchot biyadam. And a very fascinating Rama who says, if you want to be frum, you want to be honest, you want to be good, no hot water. Aye, there may be places where they're lenient. If they're lenient, don't reprimand them. Okay? And this leads us, again, I'll show the Aruch HaShulchan in 1 second, but this leads us to a whole different world. Can you be lenient? The basic pshat in the Gemara is lahachmir. What role can leniency play, labriyot, or no? The Gemara is based upon an assumption that you're going to bring mayim shuvim, but if you don't bring mayim shuvim, what's wrong? And this also leads to the whole question, if I'm machmir, do I have a right to tell anyone else off? That just came up in conversation the other day. Herbie Maltz told someone that I spoke about, Yudel Ben Meir, Yudel Rosenberg. Remember we spoke about the grandson of Rabbi Yudel Rosenberg of Montreal, the Tala Rav, in relation to a Rivim, how he helped Rabbi Graubat in Toronto. Remember we spoke about him, what was it, last week, 2 weeks ago? And this person that Herbie told about it is a brother-in-law to Yudel Rosenberg, Yudel Ben Meir, my classmate. So he came over to me at the Shtiblach, what were you talking about my brother-in-law? So I explained to him. He says, well, you should know, my brother-in-law turns on lights on Yontif, because that's what his Zayda paskind in Montreal. And that's taka true, that Rav Yudel Rosenberg, the Tala Rav, 100 years ago, wrote a Sefer dealing with the whole question of electricity on Shabbat and Yontif, and he paskind that you can turn on lunch and yontif, it's esh min ha'esh. It's like all of us do. What do? You observe, you're observing 2 days Rosh Hashanah. No? How do you light the candle the second day? You take a light from a light, right or wrong. You have to leave a yahrzeit candle burning if you don't leave a light on the gas range. Nowadays in Israel, everyone uses an electric blech. So they sell yahrzeit candles, 48 hours, 72 hours, should have a light to light lich. No, so it's a very interesting question. If I meet Yudel Rosenberg, my classmate, my sidekick, do I say to Yudel, how can you turn on lights on Yontif? The whole world doesn't turn on lights anymore. No, and he'll say to me, don't rebuke me. I'm an anacle of Rav Yudel Rosenberg of Montreal. He was Mater. It's an interesting question. Halakha l'maisa, I'm not passing you can turn lights on in Yontif. Don't misunderstand me. There's many tshuvot written today, Rav Avadja among them, that today we've learned that electricity, it's not esh me'esh. With electricity, you're closing a circuit. It's a shaylev makabapatish. It's a shaylev boner. But nevertheless, Rav Yudel Rosenberg, Paskins, you could turn on lights in Yontif. And there were many Gedolim at that time who Paskin that way. So you see with the hot water, the Rama tells us, don't rebuke anyone. The Yorich HaShulchan already, he is very sharp and very strong. Yorich HaShulchan Hilchot Mikvayot Simen Reish Aleph, beginning on Sif Chatan Reish Yud Dalet. Those of you familiar with the Yorich HaShulchan, he has many, many, many more simanim than the regular Shulchan Aruch, because the Yorich HaShulchan goes through all the sources, the Mishnah, the Gemara, the basic Rishonim, the basic Machlakot, and then he comes to the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, and he Taker explains that the Gemara and the Pshat is with bringing the hot water in Kalim and Mayim She'uvim. But in Reish Tet Zayin, he says, Ava b'chol medinot shalanu zakam edorot shemetilin chamin lemikva m'machamim oto. He says, they have patents by which to heat the mikvot, and we never rebuke these people. And he says, Adarabba, listen to this, that if we wouldn't allow this, women would stop going to mikvah and we would not have Jewish children. Pyria and Rivia would be affected negatively. Or the women would go to mikvah and would get sick. Ba'ot lidei sakana. Ulechein mikvah nahagu kein. V'ein potse peh umitzav seif. V'chas v'chalilu lefak feik al zeh. V'amafak v'kim atid litena tadin. Ak me'olam lo shamanu v'fak v'kim b'zeh. And these words of the Yorich HaShulchan are very, very sharp. The Yorich HaShulchan, as I've said many times, and I'm not the only one to say this, anyone who holds by learning in Psak Halacha, he was the last Litvish Rav. You understand? He knew how to paskin. He was born before Matan Torah, if you know that expression. He was born before Reb Chaim Brisker changed the entire approach in the Litvisha world to dialectical, to two different approaches, to Hefza, to Gavra, to Shnei Dinim, and Reb Chaim could never reach a conclusion. He could see intellectually you can go either way. Couldn't reach a conclusion. And there are many stories. The most famous story I've told you many times, I think I wrote it up, was with the Shaila Veget. A terrible shaila, because if this get would not be kosher, they could not get a get again. And it was someone going who had gone to America, and before he left his wife, he agreed to give a get, and there's a mistake in the name, and they brought the shaila to Brisk, and Reb Chaim didn't know what the paskin, and the Brisk Dayan wasn't certain what the paskin, and Reb Chaim said, send the case. He told Reb Simcha Zelig Riga, the brisket dayan, send the shaila to Reb Yitzchak Khan, inspector in Kovna, and tell him to send a one-word telegram with an answer. Kasher pasul. So the brisket dayan, the dayanim, asked Reb Chaim, Rebbe, why do you want a one-word answer? Vashalim in tekoiches from Yitzchak Khan, what are you worried about? He writes so many tshuvot, he writes thousands of pages, weekly tshuvot lahalacha. Let him write a tshuva. And Reb Chaim said, whatever he will write, I'll be able to refute. I'll see the other side. But his one-word answer as a posek, that I'm willing to accept. That was Reb Chaim. Dorach HaShulchan was before Reb Chaim. He still was from the original Volozhin, is the original learning, and he was a posek mufak. And when he reached a conclusion, he stood up and he let you have it. And you hear what he says here, that don't play shtick. If they heat the mikveh and this is their minhag, don't you say a word, don't raise the issue. God forbid you raise the issue. Atid litein et hadin. Those are very, very strong words. But you see here, with an esoteric gemara, and at the most, it's hard to say there's a nisa. You follow me up from it? It's hard to say there's a nisa. It may be that this was the minhag, they were chayshish. But, all right, Frumkai took over. No one built a mikveh with hot water. People were chayshish litvol in a mikveh that had hot water. But you see the women, have mercy. A cold mikveh, comfort, married life. Let them go to mikveh in the hot water. So Reb Menachem Mendel Landau translates this into a ruvin. Klal Yisrael is noheg lahakel. It's much easier to observe Shabbos when you have an Erev. Life is so much better. You can carry your talis to shul. You can carry your siddur to shul. You can go learn with your neighbor. You can carry a sefer. You can have pulat of Bnei Akiva, of Ezra, of Ariel, whatever organization you belong to. It is infinitely easy. You can make a kiddush, and if someone forgot a bottle of whiskey, you can send the kid home, race back with the bottle of scotch. The Jew should have a machaya, an einik Shabbos. Let alone women taking out children, not stuck in the house. What a difference the way we lived in Maplewood, South Orange, New Jersey, where I was rabbi, to the way we lived in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. Don't criticize the Erev. That's why I built an Erev, and he's telling another Rav, I encourage you to build an Erev. And all these people who cause problems, let them look into the sugya of the hot water on a mikveh and look into the Orach HaShulchan and don't open your mouths and cause trouble for Klal Yisrael. This is Reb Menachem Mendel Landau. And to tie it all together, this now justifies Shalom Gold. Bela Gold, the Rebbetzin, complained, I grew up in Toronto, there always was an Erev, we had a beautiful Shabbat there, we could take the children out, we could wheel carriages. Don't put us in a position where we have to live without an Erev. And of course, ultimately a woman gets her way, she's the boss. Shema b'kolecha, what did the Ribbono Shel Olam tell Avraham, listen to Sarah. She went out. They built an Erev. I thank my Talmud, Josh Schneider. It's a beautiful source from the writings of Reb Menachem Mendel Landau. Yes, the Sri Deyesh praises him to the sky as an individual who combined both unbelievable learning, but with the ability to function as a rav in the Western world of the turn of the 20th century. And you can see why. From this tshuva, you can absolutely see why. But you also see a klal in Psak Halacha that you're allowed to take the consideration of the public welfare. If there's a machlokes haposkim, then you have a right to puk chazi mai amar davar. Let me go one step further now. Menachem, you are in the news today that you don't know. From the world which raised you and nurtured you, the Kollel, or the Hezda program, Haredi, with the army, has now become public knowledge. What Rakefet knew as a closely guarded secret, and what I had helped raise some funds for, is now in Petach Tikva, Yeshivat Nachalim, with a whole program overflowing with students, with a whole deal with the army, 2 years of learning, 2 years of preparation, 2 years in the army, technological division, technological support, and Marava is cited and praised to the sky. And if you want to see more, Arutz Sheva, you will pick it up black and white. That began here. That's right. And who began it? My student, Rabbi Carmi Gross. Okay, so you see. And you know who Rabbi Carmi Gross is? That is the son of Rabbi Alexander Gross, Zecher Tzaddik Levracha. Do you know who he was? Talmid Mufak of Mr. Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, Torah Vidas. Mr. Mendelovich, who wanted to conquer America with day schools, and Sender Gross is the man who organized the day school in Florida. And on a personal level, you have a lot to learn from his life. He had illness. He was in his 20s. He wasn't that well. And like, he was hesitant. He didn't want to get married, though. And this woman who I had the pleasure of knowing, Shirley Pelkowitz, today. You recognize the name? She married Rabbi Ralph Pelkowitz. They were widowed. And she said, I'll marry you and I'll take care of you. And he went on to a fabulous career of Habatzat HaTorah. If I'm not, four children, at least I taught three out of the four, maybe even four out of the four. Ein Sishena from the Andara. That's what came out of the resolve of Shirley. Don't worry, I will take care of you. Follow me, Menachem? So you see, once again, we find out we are dependent on the wives we marry. And they, Baruch Hashem, Eshet Chayil Miyimsa. Okay, let us go further. Bringing it back to 2 years of lectures. Adam Mintz published a beautiful article, evidently an addendum to his doctorate, on the whole controversy in Brooklyn. And there's material here I just want to cite because it adds to what we've said over the last 2 years. Now, where did this article appear? Chakira, volume 14, which came out in 2012, beginning on page 21. I think you know about Chakira. I've quoted it before. All of you are familiar with tradition. All of you are familiar with the Torah Mother Journal that YU has put out sporadically. Chakira is a fabulous piece of work coming out of Flatbush. It's both on a very high scholarly level and also on a very high level of lamdanut, of sources, of Torah learning, of Yirat Shemayim. It's a beautiful, beautiful combination. And I highly recommend the journal to you. I believe that as time passes, it goes online. Am I right or wrong? In other words, you can download issues. I don't think they don't put it online right away, but in the course of a year or so, it does go online. Now, a chapter in American Orthodoxy, the Eruvin in Brooklyn. And this is exactly, it's a fascinating article with all the documents photographed and published in the article. And everything I've said to you is correct. It all begins with Rabbi Schreier and Shaftman, who were two of the leading rabbis from Brooklyn. Rabbi Max Schreier should live and be well. He's thank God alive. Rabbi Salman Shaftman has gone a number of years already. Rabbi Schreier, you should recognize the name. He has children living in Israel. One of them is the editor, or co-editor, or associate editor of the new Steinsaltz coming out in English, the new work. That is his son, among a number of sons. There's one son who's very prominent in the OU Kashrut department. There's another son. They're all very, very involved in Torah and Jewish activities, the children, Zonze Zangazon. And he writes the story, and he too reaches the same conclusion that I reach, that it's not only Reb Moshe Feinstein who is opposed to the Manhattan Erev and then the Brooklyn Erev, but above all, Reb Aaron Cutler was opposed. And my own feeling is, and I may be right, I may be wrong, that Reb Moshe would have been more diffident. He would have had an attitude like Manhattan: I'm opposed, but if you want to build it, yesh on me l'smoch. Maybe with Brooklyn he would have said the same thing. But once Reb Aaron was so opposed, then Reb Moshe remained very firm. They didn't budge and didn't allow any room for elu v'elu on this issue.
I remember you speaking quite a while back about the idea that there were sources that said that Reb Aaron Cutler, working out the sugya.
Absolutely. That's Reb Menachem Kasha, in the Divrei Menachem. You got to remember that Reb Menachem Kasha had a big following on the West Side. A lot of wealthy people. I'll give you an idea. I'll tell you something very interesting. If you go to Shaarei Tzedek, you'll see that a good part of the hospital was built by the Bentheim family. You've heard the name, and they're a wonderful, wonderful family. Mamish beyond words. When Life magazine did an article on Jews living as Jews in America, was a big shock to the world. I think it's back in 1957, and you can check me out. So the family that they chose was the Bentheim family. I believe there were seven children. The Finks of Scranton, the Bentheim family in New York, and Look magazine, Time magazine. You can read about it. Maybe it's online. Again, everything is on the computer, but I don't know how you have to call it up. This family, all the children remained from, many came in Aliyah. So they did a lot of good in their baby. They're related to Jesselson, that's a cousin. So they did a lot of good in Shaarei Tzedek. Now, the Bentheims told me that the mother, the Siegfried's mother, that's the original Bentheim family to reach America before Hitler, so she was a tzaddeket. And her son told me she had three boyfriends. Who were her boyfriends? Reb Menachem Kasher, Reb Aaron Cutler, and the Panovich Rav. Whenever when they came to America, this is the home they ate in. She gave tremendous support. Her husband raised funds. So you see, there was an interconnection between Reb Aaron Cutler, Reb Menachem Kasher, despite Reb Menachem Kasher was a Gera Chassid, Reb Aaron Cutler was Kulo Litvak, Reb Menachem Kasher was one of the greatest Zionists alive, Reb Aaron Cutler was one of the greatest Agudistim alive, but Reb Menachem Kasher was pressing for the Erev, and the Bentheims, there was a committee, there was money being put up. I mean, it was getting off the floor. There was heavy money behind it. They could do what they wanted, and they controlled the city. No one's going to stand in opposition to them. And when Reb Menachem Kasher pressed Reb Aaron, according to Reb Menachem Kasher, Reb Aaron said, I have noch nicht gegangen durchgemacht, der Sugi in a lange Zeit. I haven't worked out the Sugi in a long time, and I'm working on it. And Reb Aaron Cutler died before there was any definitive answer.
So why do you think he was so opposed to it?
And so in the Mishnah, Reb Aaron, they publish as if it's a tshuva and a riv, and I went through it, I quoted in class, but it's not halacha lemaisa, it's just dealing with the sugyas. The reason I hold he was so opposed is because Reb Aaron mentions it, Reb Moshe mentions it, other people mention it, Hapades mentions it, and they cite time and again that Reb Aaron Cutler was opposed. So, and he signed on it, there was a whole Pasquiler, as they call it, a whole announcement, and he signed, he's one of the signatures, and all right, regarding Reb Yosef Elio Henkin, there they claim he originally signed that he was opposed to an Erev in Manhattan. It turns out the original Pasquiler signature is not there. And we have written information and oral information that Rav Yosef Elio Henkin, as I said, I don't want to repeat all my lectures, he was not totally opposed. He just put down conditions that we had to be sure it would not break down observance of Shabbat. Now, with Brooklyn, you all know the story. They come to Reb Menashe Klein. He's willing to do an Erev. He wants to see Reb Moshe. If Reb Moshe doesn't, he can't get to Reb Moshe. And the Satmar Rav, Reb Yoel, the Satmar Chassidim, were they in favor? Weren't they in favor? All this happened towards the end of the Satmar Rebbe's life when he was no longer functioning. You have to understand that Reb Yoelish was the first one to react to the Six-Day War. He put out a sefer that I've spoken about in the Monday class years ago. I happen to know the sefer basically by heart. Al ha-gula v'al ha-tmura. Again, I can't get involved now or take up the rest of the shiur. But that sefer, he shows that the Six-Day War was an absolute farce. It was Maisa Sutton. And that's where he criticizes the Lubavitcher Rebbe. All of you who are reading the biographies of the Rebbe, and you'll hear my lectures next year, will reach it. That was a turning point in their relationship because the Satmar, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, called the Six-Day War a miracle and Tzahal and what they won and what they accomplished and what they did. And they started putting on tefillin on anyone at the Kotel. You all know the tefillin campaign that began during the waiting period before the war broke out, that long wait from Yom HaTzmut to June 4th, etc., etc., Chaf Chediyah next Sunday. And the Rebbe told his followers, put tefillin on every soldier. It's an open pasuk for the Gemara in Brachot. And the Gemara says, Tfilin Shel Rosh, the Kesh of Tfilin Shel Rosh, and they'll be afraid of you, and then everyone put on Tfilin. Then at the Kotel, they put up the Tfilin stands right away, and that's how it was zeicher that until today, the Kotel has a mechitzer and is a shul, and it's not just an architectural artifact from ancient history. You don't know what the leftists were capable of decreeing here. And we had, and a good deal of it, you have to thank the tefillin stands of the Chabatnikim. And the Rebbe, the Satmar Rav, attacked the Lubavitcher Rebbe. How can it be a miracle? How can you put tefillin on? I'll just give you one example from the book, Al Torah, page 104, I believe it is, where he calls the Rebbe a big sinner, because you're putting tefillin on men who are not allowed to put tefillin on, because all Israeli men think of is raping and seducing women. That's why they want women in their army, so they should have prostitutes at their call, beck and call, and every man, all he's dreaming about is women, and you're putting tefillin on him, and that's an actual quote, word by word, from the book. So I don't have to tell you, the Satmar Rav soon afterwards had a terrible stroke. And you understand the Rosh Yeshiva Lo Aleinu, when a Rosh Yeshiva, we should all live and be well, is ill, he can no longer say Shir. I don't want to give examples, but there are many examples. The Rav gave his last Shir Chanukah 1985, and he lived for another eight years, 1993. Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, the last year and a half, was not able to say Shia. But a Rebbe, he's held up by Gabayim, so the Gabayim held up the Rebbe, and he functioned, didn't function. So it's hard to tell. They wanted an Arab, they didn't want an Arab, they were opposed, they weren't opposed. But as I told you, the Hungarians, it's very hard for a Hungarian to oppose an Erev. If he opposes an Erev, he may have a din of an apikiris. It's all the tshuva of the Chatam Sofer that I quoted to you so many times. Well, and we'll come back to it yet, if not this week, next week, with Reb Menashe Klein. Now, the new Satmarov, the Sigaturov, who succeeded his uncle, because the Satmarov left no direct descendants who could succeed him, the Sigaturov evidently was in favor of the Erev. And an Erev was built in Borough Park. It was an Erev that depended upon many tzurat ha-petach that had to be put up in a partisan fashion. Wires had to be put up. Not everyone was happy with the Erev. At first, there was machlokes, the Erev was ripped down. The usual story, you all saw what happened to Reb Menashe Klein, how much he suffered. In 2000, a new Erev was built in Borough Park. And this Erev didn't rely upon telephone wires, didn't rely upon electricity wires. This Erev, at crucial junctures or junctions, they put up very good poles, freestanding poles, and wires that were put up directly and only for the Erev, like the Jerusalem Erev. In Borough Park, you can see places. If you look up, you will see the Erev with your own eyes, and it's exactly like a Jerusalem Erev. It's not using poles, not using lechi, not using a perfect Erev, the wire going through on top. And with this Erev, 90% of the Hasidic world accepted the Erev in Borough Park. Today, it isn't ripped down. The Litvakim don't carry, or at least in public they don't carry. The Hasidim do carry, and the Machloket in Borough Park has subsided to a great degree. One of the opposition in Borough Park, I know we spoke about it in class, where they came out, the tznius factor, that now that there is an Erev, and he writes about it, I have to give him credit, everything I said in class is here in this beautiful article. And he said it before me, it's 2012, I didn't have the article, I have the article afterwards, but whatever I prepared, we're working off the same sources. So he did a beautiful job. You have to give credit. You have to say this man did a beautiful job on a Reuven. And if he publishes, and I hope he's listening, it's not just his PhD thesis, but he has to add this article as well. He has to combine it. You don't, when you publish a book, if you know my work on Rabbi Revel, the published volume is very different than the thesis, because the thesis, every syllable I say, I give a footnote there. Hundreds upon hundreds and hundreds of footnotes. To publish a volume like that, two people in the world will read it, your mother and father. So the volume has to be published with a little bit more life, a little bit more honey, a little bit more spice, and fewer footnotes. And you say, for more complete, if you need more complete footnotes and citations, see the doctorate. So the Borough Park Erev, ultimately, because of the Hasidic thrust, has gained acceptance like any other Erev in the world. In 2003, an Erev was built in Williamsburg, and that was the first Erev. So I'm coming back to Borough Park. Wait, before I go to Williamsburg, I'm coming back to Borough Park. So I was in the middle of telling you, so this person came out that the Erev is against Sniyot. What's the Erev against Sniyot? Because until now, women couldn't go out of the house. They had to take care of the children. Now that women can go out of the house on Shabbat, men will see women. All right, Aaron Rakefet, is not the only one. When I saw this, I mean, Ribbono Shel Olam, what world are we dealing with? Are we all like that rabbi in Georgetown? By the way, the prosecutor's asking for 16-year sentence for someone I know. Join the club of people Rakefet knows who have gone to jail. Okay. 16-year. Are we all predators? Are we all sexual fiends here? I don't know. I learned Torah all my life. I had Rebbeim Gedolei Yisrael. God have mercy. Who would ever dream to think that a Rebbe, I don't want to mention it. We saw Rebbeim up close. We saw the way they got along with their wives. I was a Ben Bayer to Rabbi Meir Bonstein, Rabbi Yerucham Gerelik, I mean, the Rabbi Hanach Fishman, Rabbi Shmuel Leizer Volk. I mean, I saw their wives. Some of them had more dominant wives. Some of them had less dominant wives. Some of them were childhood sweethearts. Some of them met during the hardships of World War II. But who are we dealing with? We punish them? What are we? And we're learning Torah? You're learning Torah? What are you, animals? What, are you walking the street and eat chalza? I don't understand. Ah, so the Munkat Shurav, right? Remember I read this, I gave you the source. He does it here. He came out furious. How do you say a thing like that? Ribbono Shel Olam, what are we dealing with? What are we supposed to do? Execute all men and women? They shouldn't look at each other. Ribbono Shel Olam. So, the Erev Koran. And if you go to Borough Park on Shabbos, you'll see the playgrounds filled with men, women, and children, and baby carriages, and Baruch Hashem. No one's ripping down the Erev today. Williamsburg became a tremendous machloket. For obvious reasons, Williamsburg is Williamsburg. One of the Jews who was one of the activists in building the Erev, remember I spoke about this in class a year ago, he has it all, December 9th, 2011, Elimelech Weiss was run over by a car on Friday night and killed. And all over Williamsburg, there were Pasquales that God killed him because he was in favor of the Erev. He is a Machalal Shabbos per Parhesia, and that's why he was killed. Well, I needn't comment on this. If you see what happened in Nepal, how many different Rabbanim spoke out and gave reasons why the tragedy in Nepal. I don't know. Katanti. I sat in front of Gedolei Yisrael. I mean, I see, you know, morons right on the internet that Rav Soloveitchik said we can't understand the Holocaust. So then how come Rabbi Soloveitchik can understand Hakamat Medinat Yisrael? That's the big problem with the internet. Every idiot in the world can say whatever he wants. And that's it. It's there, all right? As long as you don't say, shoot Obama or throw a... No, I mean, you know, that one guy just wrote he's going to blow up Har HaBayit on Lag BaOmer. You saw, though, thank God, the police in Jerusalem. Kid, I God. Torah. Matechayalah. We have to be Mecharech. We have to be gone. Tzadikim, Chassidim, period. So, everyone's giving reasons. Caused a tremendous backlash in Williamsburg. And in Williamsburg today, I would say, no one is ripping down the Erev anymore. You want to be samach on it, you can be samach on it. Chassidim are samach. Many are samach. You don't want to be samach? All right, you have a choice. Fine. If you're Hungarian, you don't have this choice. But if you're not Hungarian, you have the choice. Now, with Flatbush, as time moves on, more and more people are carrying. You can't fight the Erev. So they made improvements in the Erev. And this is Mamish Halacha Lamaisa. You all know we had a terrible tragedy in Israel, which Tzoek LaShamayim at the funeral of Rabbi Shmuel Vuzna. Shevet Halevi, I think, is Chivata called. So you all know what happened. Could you imagine from Jews, B'nai Brak Jews, two people killed, trampled, other people injured, beyond comprehension. Compare that with the Baron Lichtenstein's funeral. You see the difference. It's unbelievable. Anyway, Rabbi Woznar has a family all over the world. There's a Woznar, I understand, in London. He has a son in Muncie, a son here. So they approached Rabbi Benzion Woznar, the Rosh based in Shevet Halevi in Muncie, and a well-known expert on the laws of Eruvin, to come to Flatbush and see the Erev. On May 1st, 2004, Rabbi Woznar wrote, "I was asked by the rabbis of Flatbush, Brooklyn. Included in this group were leaders of shuls, heads of yeshivas, and knowledgeable and prominent rabbanim to express my opinion on the Erev they are erecting in their neighborhood according to the custom of our forefathers and rabbis from time immemorial all over the world. After repeated in-depth and all-encompassing investigations, I find that they have successfully accomplished Hashem's wish to erect an Erev of very high standards that is primarily reliant on real mechitzat and mechitzat within mechitzat that surround the area on four sides. I would like to publicly announce that the Flatbush Erev is kosher for all without any doubt or question." Unbelievable. 1 year later, the Vod that put out this Erev, Labriot, put out a volume, The Community Erev, a discussion of the halachic issues regarding the Eruvin in Brooklyn. And here they make a very, very fascinating point. And this takes us back to contemporary Hashkafa and all that's going on today. Gentlemen, why is not machlokes over an Erev? Why does Aaron Rakefet live in a world without machlokes? I know Rakefet very well. And I can say that Nemanah, he tries to be a good Jew. He wakes up very early. He's learning already by 4:30. He's going through Shas a third time. When he drives, he allows cars to go in front of him. Stops at a crosswalk even before the person enters and waves them on. Sometimes they wave back and he feels happy. Tries to be a good Jew. He has friends in the left. We'll talk about this. Not now, maybe next week I'll have a little time for Hashkafa. Certainly in America I'll have to talk about it. He has friends. The Mizrahi today has left-wingers, centrist, right-wingers. He has friends in all parts. The Aguda world, the Hasidic world. He has friends all over. What's the secret of Rakefet? The secret is very simple. I've said it in class 1,000 times over. The minute someone tells you, their Hashkafa says, this is it, no one else is right, run as far as you can. Because all that leads to is more machloket and more machloket and more machloket. And you saw yourself in the last election, 150,000 from people didn't vote or wasted their vote. It's too tragic. There would have been a whole different government today. And so people say, so Rakefet, what are you so upset about that the person, I want to mention his name, from Shari Tzedek told people not to vote? About 30,000 people listened to him. He cost Aguda 1 to 2 seats. What do you care what happened to Aguda? You're not Aguda this. But I want to ask you a question. Aguda Yisrael, are they in favor of Shmirat Shabbat? What do you say, Alex? I hope so. Are they in favor of Kashrut? I hope so. Are they in favor of Tarat Mishpacha? I hope so. No, another 2 seats in the government. Fabulous. What do you want out of me? I can be a Mizrahi, but it doesn't affect my love for Torah. Okay. But you see, the world doesn't agree with Rakefet. The world's attitude is Das Torah. One way to go. Everything else is wrong. And you see this time and time and time and time again. Now watch. It's a very interesting point he makes in his article. It's a sociological point, but I was blown away by how true it is. Das Torah. Fine. Everyone else is wrong. I'm right. This is the way to go. Anyone else doesn't know anything. Don't vote in the election. Agudas Israel, a bunch of apikarsim. Degelat Torah, a bunch of apikarsim. All right, fine. So you see, in a world like this, the kashrut we eat shows where we belong. I'm in the supermarket. Yomo's looking for a bedatz hechshav. No bedatz, not good. No. Vic comes along, he's looking for Sheirit Yisrael hechshav. No Sheirit Yisrael, okay. No, my wife comes along, she comes from Bel's Chassidim, she's looking for the Bel's, Machzikei Hadat hechshav. No Machzikei Hadat, no good. Ah, but you see with a hechshav, you can cheat. No one sees. You like a certain cake, and it only has machzikei hadat, and you don't eat that. But all right, b'diavad kenechtasesu b'tzeknish. My friend Rabbi Alpert had beautiful stories. He made a living, Lizer Chazeik Tzadik Levracha, the photographer of the Rav, Irwin Albert Roy, who was known as Uncle Roy. So Roy, his shul was in a played-out area, although that area today is resuscitating because you can take a train right into Manhattan from there. It's in the end of Queens, but then it was a bad neighborhood. So he made a living at a little shul, or a big shul, but with a small minyan. But he had many funerals. So he would come back from the funerals via Brooklyn. And then there was one place he would come back. There was an outlet for Entenmann's cake cookies. And he would stop there to get them. And he takes a look. He sees at the outlet, Chassidim buying. You understand that? And they were embarrassed. They see her. They knew who he was, Rabbi Albert. They come, this is not for the kinder. It's only for the children. You see, Entenmann's is a problem. What's the problem? Cholav Akum. I can use it. And even if I'm Machpin and Cholav Yisrael, but I'm Machpin Alamdin, it's milk powder. Very hard to say that milk powder is Cholav Akum. You know why? It didn't exist at the time that the Gezerah begins. It goes back to the Gemara. Huat, milk powder. It's a new invention. But if you know, no one's going to see you. When it comes to Erev, you're in public. Imagine you're carrying in public and Talmidim from Lakewood see you. Atreifnak. I'm garnished. How can you? This guy has a restaurant and he's carrying in public on Shabbos. How can you eat there? He's samach on the chveis, the chassidim. Let the chassidim eat there. No Litvak should cross his threshold. It's a very interesting point that when you carry in public on Shabbos, when your wife wheels a baby carriage, you reveal who your posek is, where you're coming from, what school of thought. And of course, when you go with the concept, I have truth and no one else counts, then you're written off the map. Very sad, but very true. And this may very well be why the argument is so deep and emotions run so high when you talk about the Erev on Shabbat. And on page 47, he goes into probably the cutest part of, we spoke about this a year and a half ago. I love this article because it makes me happy that I left nothing out in my Sheyurim. He goes into Rav Moshe Feinstein. You have the source right here. Rav Moshe, where Rav Moshe writes, what do we need an Eira for? Remember Rav Moshe? Rav Moshe writes, in Europe, you needed an Eirav to bring the chalent home on Shabbos. In Europe, I heard you had a chalent here. Moshe, what were you complaining about? I walked in earlier and Moshe was...
Don't worry about it.
The chalent was good or was... The chalent was okay. All right, it was the lack of drink that you're complaining. But I see in next to Sherry, I can't even walk in. There's somebody...
That's for
That's not the, no wonder. I couldn't understand why I didn't have drinks. I heard Moshe complaining, and poor Sherry, she gets it from all of us. And I see endless bottles and bottles and bottles of every type of soda. I'm thinking to myself, what is this, Kafka? They're complaining, no soda, and I'm looking at the 36 bottles of every soda you can imagine. No, the challenge. It's not like today you had an oven in your house. Chalent was made in the central bakery and each person had his own pot. And you had your name on the pot. They would wrap something around the pot. You had to be able to identify it. You had to carry it home on Shabbos. I've reached the age in life where I don't eat chalent on Shabbos if I can avoid it. You understand? You go through cycles in life. But of course, when I was young, chalent. Wasn't the Shabbos without chalent? And I don't have to tell you, the Gemara with chalent, or Rabbi Yehuda Nasi with the Roman minister, the Roman king, ruler, whatever, chalent is chalent. But Rav Moshe writes in America, no one has to schlep the chalent home. Everyone has an oven in his house. So what do we need an era for? So Rav Menashe Klein writes back, B'mechilit Kvod, Rav Moshe Feinstein, he says, children on Shabbos. He says, Rav Menashe Klein says, I see with my own eyes in Borough Park, little kids are walking, suddenly they don't have energy to walk. The parents have to pick them up, the parents have to carry them. In America, people are worried about being robbed. I don't know, in Europe, I guess there was less worry about being robbed. I know many places in Israel, people still leave their doors open on Shabbos. I know in the kibbutzim, in Moshavim, etc., etc. But people need a key. And the same reasons that we were makil for chalent, we have to be makil in America. And above all, Rav Menashe Klein writes the whole problem of Shabbat Sukkot, where you have an unbelievable problem. I grew up with that problem. How do you get your food to the sukkah and the shul? Who could build a sukkah? We grew up in apartment houses. I don't know, in my apartment house, 72 families live, 75 families live. What, when, where, sukkah? But the shul had a sukkah. There was a shtickler rebbe that I would go to a sukkah after he finished eating. How do you get your food there on Shabbat Chol HaMoed, Sukkot? This was the nightmare. Sukkot that fell on Shabbat, etc., etc. This was the nightmare. And Rav Menashe Klein writes about it. But on page 49, he has something that I never saw before. And he adds the following story that Reb Levi Yitzchak Karowitz, recognized the name, the Boston Rebbe from Brookline, told Rav Menashe Klein that at that time, in Boston, in Brookline, there was no Erev. And the Boston Rebbe, and if you knew the Boston Rebbe, I knew the Boston Rebbe, it's Kulo Avat Yisrael, Kulo Chesed. The Boston Rebbe, a little bit, describes a woman with four children who came to him complaining that Shabbat was her most agonizing day of the week, rather than the most enjoyable one, because she could not take her young children outdoors. She confessed to the Boston Rebbe that due to this situation, she would make sure not to give birth to any more children. Rabbi Klein comments that the lack of a rhythm can create such terrible and sinful episodes. So you see, what a story. No children, no Arabs, no children. Each child is precious. You have no idea what comes out of one child, one more child. You have no idea, you have no idea. It's an open Gemara. You never know what will succeed in life. You educate, you have no idea what comes out. Kanain Hara, I have my family, a niece, 13 children. Each child, either they're learning around the clock in Hamar, or they're rising very high in the Israeli Defense Forces. One by one, getting married. One by one, marrying into the finest religious Zionist families. Children. I want to, like, brother, one grandchild after another. The whole world. Ultimately, hundreds of direct descendants. No? What do the Jews need more? But you have to have mazel. You can have one child, turns out this way, another child another way. You have to have, you have to try. Remember the Rakefet litmus test? I always judge a person to get to know him, where he stands, by how he tried to raise his children. I don't judge the way they turned out. You need a lot of muscle with children. But I can tell right away, if someone sends them to a school with boys and girls learning together, it's one type of lifestyle. Send them with their separate educations, another type of lifestyle. You judge, you see, you understand. What an unbelievable story. Now, then at the end of the article, he goes into the whole rabbinical scene in America. Once again, something that we touched upon in class, when the whole era of controversy began, the Posek Achron of American Jewry was Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. When I had a shaila in 1961, I read about it in Washington, if you recall the shaila, the shul that I came to in Lower Merion, I was the second rabbi there, it was a converted house. The shul was big enough to hold the Shabbos minyan, but it was not big enough to hold the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur minyan when a lot of outsiders came into daven, as is the vogue in many parts of the United States until today. So in order to accommodate the people, the big conservative multi-million dollar temple across the street from us, Temple Israel, offered us space. I believe it was in their library building. We could set up and have our daven. And of course, here the question comes, how can you daven in a conservative temple? So, I can't answer the question. Number one, I can't answer the question because even if I can answer it, no one's going to listen to a 23-year-old rabbi in his first pulpit, in his first weeks. Big deal. The rabbi said this, the rabbi said that. But who did I turn to? I turned to Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. And he answered the question. And I wrote out a tshuva in the name of Rav Henkin, that as long as the service is within our control, mechitza, proper davening, he can see no reason why we can't daven in that conservative temple.
Would he have allowed it even in the sanctuary?
If we put a mechitza, I'm pretty sure he would have allowed it. There's no reason why not. Okay? I can tell you, just let me move sideways for 1 minute, I want to finish, but let me move sideways. This was what Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin paskened, and we went ahead and davened in the conservative temple. I write about it in Washington, how during the break, before Ne'ilah. I had a little break after Mincha, and I walked outside to get some fresh air. You know, you're fasting, you want a little bit of air. And there was the traffic jam with the police, hundreds of cars coming back to Temple Israel for the Ne'ilah service. And I write in Washington, I often wonder how many of their descendants are still Jewish today. What's amazing is Lower Merion Synagogue is the most important Orthodox synagogue in the entire state of Pennsylvania today. It is massive, mikveh, day school nearby, yeshiva, etc. And I don't even believe Temple Israel is there anymore. It's unbelievable what happens in the passage of time. Now, moving sideways, if you go to Hillcrest, Utopia Parkway, a massive campus synagogue, conservative temple, Utopia Parkway Jewish Center, if I'm not mistaken. I've told the story many times. And a lot of from people live in that area. They don't have an Orthodox shul. The Young Israel is a number of blocks to walk. The older you get, the harder it is. When it rains, it snows. You don't want to walk that far. So they asked permission from the temple. They'd like to make a minyan downstairs with a mechitza. The temple made a condition, we'll be happy to let you do it, but you have to take out membership in the temple. There are no free lunches. So they asked, if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Heschel Schechter, and he, Paskin, doesn't see anything wrong. And here, these from families became members in the temple and made the minyan downstairs. Time moved on. New, what's happening? All the conservative Jews, the younger generation is intermarried or moved away. The older people have died, Lo Aleinu, or gone down to Florida. Now, in this temple, you have votes, and the overwhelming majority votes to turn the temple into an Orthodox synagogue. That's the famous story. One woman went to court that the temple is a trust. Over the years, she and her husband gave tens of thousands of dollars that it should remain a conservative temple. She wants to sit next to her husband on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur when she comes to shul. And now the issue before the judge was, does a conservative temple have to have mixed seating? And they brought expert testimony that at the seminary, Rabbis Finkelstein and Lieberman had a minyan from time immemorial that had a mechitza. Now, JTS is conservative, and it shows you can have a conservative temple with a mechitza. And that's what the judge ruled, and today it is a bastion of Torah. I believe the Bukharan community took over the place. The shul continues. It's a very fascinating chapter. But who did you go to? Rabbi Yosef Elio Henkin. By the time the 70s come around, Rav Henkin is on in years. He's blind, Lo Aleinu. He dies, I believe, in 73 or 74. You can check it out. And now Rabbi Moshe is the posek mufak. And that's why everyone in Brooklyn knew they could not build an Arab without Rabbi Moshe's approval. And that's why the Brooklyn controversy will always be recalled as the controversy between Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and Rabbi Menashe Klein. And that controversy lives on. However, Fukhazi, my Amad Davar, as we will speak about next week when we end off the year with a tshuva from Rabbi Menashe Klein, that is fascinating, and then to be multilithic, I pull out of the latest issue of the scholarly publication that's published by Chovevei Torah, an unbelievable article on a Reuven that opens your mind to a total new reality and brings you into the world of Bezalel School of Art, brings you into the world of Bezalel from the Chumash. But we'll leave that for next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. So what did we do today? Well, today the heart of the shiur was the connection that Reb Menachem Mendel Landau makes between heating a mikveh and building an eruv. The implication is, for poskim, that part of psak has to deal with chuk chazi, the Jewish people, their lifestyle, their needs. Doesn't mean chas v'chalila we can alter halacha, but it means within the halacha context, if there's mum to move left or mum to move right, we have to consider the populace. My dear students, I wouldn't miss tomorrow for all the bets that are now being placed, and I got involved in one of them, how long this government will last. I was on the bus minding my business. Though this is a true story, it happened to me this week. Coming back from my son-in-law, the dentist, I have more gold in my mouth, my teeth are wealthier today. And then I went to Kupat Cholim, and from there I went to the Shuk, and I bought up some good Pesach cookies, dirt cheap, that my wife and myself like, and seem to have less sugar than the regular cookies. And there I am on the 32, minding my business, and there's a whole parliament there, about six, one woman, five men, all from evidently living in Gilo, and they're debating how long the government will last, and they say to me, I'm a total stranger. What's your opinion? And boy, did I get involved, and I'm talking, and then you say, Masita, you know, what did you do? I figure, a guy my age, they're all retired, the parliament. So I tell them, Lo avadati yom echad b'chayim shalei, never worked a day in my life. And they look at me, and I say, Zachiti lelamei Torah 56 shana v'ken hala. And I wouldn't miss tomorrow's Shia for all the parliaments that are now meeting in the state of Israel. Tomorrow, I'll start the relationship between the Rav and the Rebbe in Berlin, with many side stories, implications, try to understand what happened, try to predict the past. But I have a pretty good track record, because with Berlin, I spoke with the Rav, and I've walked the streets with both the Rav and the Rebbe. Gentlemen, anyone here who's a baseball fan, is a fabulous article sent to me. Oh, sent me by the rabbi of Utopia Park Jewish Center, Rabbi Hertz. Baseball's Jewish moment of all, 1951. The batter, the pitcher, and the hitter. The batter, the pitcher, and the catcher were all Jewish. What is going to happen? And the empire says to the batter, what a moment, three heaves. I've never had this before. And the article raises the question, was this an anti-Semitic remark? And I want to come in, Rabbi Hertz. I don't think so. I think he was just saying, Lou Limmer was the sent up the pinch hit. Saul Ragovin was the pitcher. Joe Ginsburg, the catcher. And I'll tell you what's interesting about Lou Limmer. Lou Limmer was a fairly observant Jew. By the standards of 1951, you would even call him an Orthodox Jew. He came from a Torah background. Later in life, he was president of the shul he davened in Castle Park Jewish Center, I believe it was called. The rabbi was a friend of mine who got smichi either with me a year afterwards, Rabbi Jerry Pomerantz, Zichrona Levracha. That's who the batter was. So if anyone's interested, Bavakasha. Can I give you something, Herb, to hold on for Rabbi Rubin? Two things, okay? And
is he going to be back next week?
I hope he's back next week. Next week, now, next week we have regular class. I spoke with Rabbi, but this regular class. I spoke with Rabbi Miller. I wanted to know where I stand. Have regular class. So I'm teaching tomorrow. I'm teaching next Sunday. I'm teaching the Monday afterwards. That Monday night I get on the plane, and no one will hear me open my mouth again in this room until the new term begins sometime in Chodesh Elul B'ezrat Hashem. It doesn't mean I'm going to be silent, but there are other places to speak, to talk, and maybe to make a living, let's put it that way, because YU, 8 Maria congregation, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik was right. Until we meet again in health and happiness, that's Badania.
Vibes magazine, the picture of the woman doing her
right. It's Think. It's Think. I think it's then it may be Look magazine. It's one of
the Life magazine was the Thinks. It was Victor Geller was the one who made the connection.
Right. So then it's
could be Look.
It's Look magazine. Right. The Bentham.
Could I?
What was his first name? What was?
El
Spendheim. He was the photographer. El Spendheim, and what was her husband, late husband?
Else. She's still alive.
Yeah, she's living well. And her late husband, what was Bentheim's first name? Anybody?
Charlie.
Yeah,
it's uncharted setting. Charlie.
Yeah. Charles Bentheim. You got it.
You know Michael Eisenberg?
Yeah, sure.
That's his grandson. He lived across the street from Mishima.
That's the grandson. That is correct.
Did I trouble you for a ride?
No trouble. What's the trouble?
Thank you.
Pleasure. We will squeeze you in. No problem.